We take pride in feeling that we are trying to passionately raise the bar. We just have to keep navigating through, hold our heads up, and do what's right. I remember in the beginning, I would have taken anything, work for work's sake. Like, oh, you know, we'll take that one, we'll do that one, and build it up for volume. But after a while, that doesn't really, if you want to stand the test of time, you have to have certain principles.
This is the Righteous Capitalist Podcast, hosted by Doug Zacher. How we make money matters.
Hey, right now, I don't know if you're working on your house or cleaning your apartment. What I do know is you're listening to The Righteous Capitalists. I'm your host, Doug Zacher, and I want to thank you for letting us join you in whatever it is you're doing. And speaking of maintaining and cleaning, what do you think it feels like to lead the company that your great-grandfather founded 100 years ago? To be honest, until I started thinking about this episode, I hadn't given it any thought. And it's no wonder. The media focuses on trends and fads, which are generally not the forte of 100-year-old companies. On top of that, two-thirds of businesses don't last beyond 10 years, let alone 100 years, so there just aren't that many examples for anyone to talk about. Today's righteous capitalist is Rob Francis, the CEO of Planned Companies and the great-grandson of Bernard Francis, who started the company in 1898. That's 120 years ago. Planned Companies is a real estate services company that provides janitorial, maintenance, security, and concierge services at residential and office buildings. They have 3,500 employees in over 1,000 buildings from North Carolina to Massachusetts, as well as in San Francisco. We're coming to you from a conference room in the Planned Companies headquarters in New Jersey. It's your typical corporate conference room with a big table that has a phone speaker in the center, comfortable chairs, and a giant monitor on the wall. It couldn't be any more different from when I was in Ironbound Cider's tap room with its reclaimed wood bar and cider taps. But I am just as, if not more, glad to be here. You see, this podcast is not just interested in the hip and cool 100% socially conscious startups that can shape their businesses in all of the righteous ways they choose. It's also interested in the long existing companies that have righteous capitalists at their helm. After all, a 120-year-old business is by definition a sustainable business. So you must be doing something right. So thank you, Rob, for having me here today, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Doug. I appreciate it.
So Bernard Francis, your great-grandfather, who founded the company as a window cleaning business in 1898. What do you know about him?
I know he was a Russian immigrant who came over to Newark, New Jersey, spoke very little English, and felt what would be the easiest and best way to make money. And so with a bucket of water, a rag, and a squeegee, started to clean storefront windows in Newark, New Jersey. One window, one client led to the next client, to the next client, and then he built a business just through his hard work ethic and doing something that I think many who came over were looking to do, like something that they could, you know, with their work ethic and their hands, like right, just to figure out how to make ends meet.
Well, I could tell you that my great-grandfather, Al Hellman, started a janitorial business cleaning windows in New York City. It was my grandmother's father, and then my grandfather worked for them once they got married. So by all definition, family business.
And I've met a lot of great families that have started out as window cleaners in different states, communities as we've grown. And I've been to industry conferences that they started out and generationally have built up businesses that are built on the right way, built on values. But it's amazing how many of us got our start in this janitorial or window cleaning world at the time because it's not a glamorous business, but done well, done right. Mm-hmm. It's a great business.
Yeah. So what do you think was sort of the glue that held the family together as this company grew?
It's a great question. I would say that, so after my, you know, great-grandfather started it, my grandfather, he had two sons. My grandfather went to World War II, came back and built up the janitorial maintenance business alongside the window cleaning. My grandfather, Irwin, who was my mentor when I started in the business, and unfortunately passed away in 2000, but he is someone who I emulate and think about all the time. He had two sons, my father, my uncle. They built up the business in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And, you know, I joined in the 90s. I started cleaning a mall in New Jersey during
mall?
Summer. Livingston Mall?
That's my mall.
That's your mall?
That's
yes,
my mall.
I was in the 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. shift. You know, you get a real appreciation for what goes on in these mm-hmm. buildings. And then I formally or officially joined in 98. So 21 fast years. And I guess the quick answer is, you know, we talk about companies that have a foundation or a culture that's built on certain values. So here, from my great-grandfather through, we've had four core values that I always say you can write them on a wall or you can live them. Mm-hmm. And for our company, we hire on them, we recognize them, we promote for them. And so we built a society based on integrity. Either you have it or you don't. So we were doing napkin deals and handshake deals mm-hmm. to start. So your word is your bond.
Right.
We're very big believers in delivering that exceptional service and wowing the clients. So they'll recommend you to their cousin or to someone in the industry. Teamwork, we believe everyone counts. Everyone contributes. You can park titles at the door. Doesn't mm-hmm. matter. If the part-time janitor reaches out to me, I'm reaching back out to them.
Right.
This is a society that's built on everyone and their contributions and never being complacent. What got us here won't keep us here. So those values and really living them and not just talking them, I think has allowed us to go from that one storefront window mm-hmm. in Newark, New Jersey, to, as you nicely mentioned in your intro, over 1,000 properties in 11 states with over 3,700 employees. We don't even sub them out. So that's, mm-hmm. those are our team members. Or associates that we're building and growing, and it's been amazing.
I'm sure I'm not the first to think that planned companies is about the most ambiguous company title you could think of.
Yeah,
where's it come from?
so we were Atlantic Building Maintenance, and that made sense, and then All State Cleaning, and that made sense, and then in '84. My family sold to an English conglomerate called Pritchard. And so we had a 5-year non-compete in this area. And my father, I'll give the credit, came up with Planned. Planned is, in his mind, a very thoughtful, intentional, organized way of doing business.
Right.
Like, instead of, he says, if you fail to plan to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So he was just thought, you know, we're just going to be Planned.
Mm-hmm.
And so he came up with that. I agree that people mm-hmm. are like, well, what is
do?
Yeah, like,
sure.
But that's who came up.
That's
with
amazing,
that.
Though, that you mentioned this with the values as well. That was such a philosophy of his
yeah.
that he just baked it right into the title of the company.
Sure,
like, let's not
yeah.
just talk about it. We're just gonna it's gonna be on every single thing that we do.
Right. I think that's been part of the charm, though. Like when people talk about cultures or the DNA of an organization, I think that's part of our charm. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of what's made Planned. You know, successful and allowed us to grow organically to where we are is that we do interweave these things mm-hmm. into how we build the society and how we live.
I would think an evolutionary change over all these years, being a janitorial services company and a maintenance company, has to do with the products you guys use to clean.
Absolutely.
I mean, I can only imagine how noxious things used
sure.
to be.
So we have three lead APs here, leaders in energy and environmental design.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're one of them, yes?
I noticed that
on LinkedIn, the letters were next to
absolutely.
Your name.
I think I did that back in November of 2008. So is our COO and one of our vice presidents in the New York and Connecticut and Massachusetts market. So mm-hmm. Astrid Garana, Safa Palovic, and myself are all lead APs. And so the products, to get to your question, you know, being biodegradable, non-toxic, having the right, you know, products in the buildings means a great deal. Breathing fresh air
mm-hmm.
Matters.
Right.
So it matters to our employees. It mm-hmm. matters to the tenants. It matters to the residents. Mm-hmm. So we really did take a step back to understand, well, what products are we putting in the buildings that are sustainable that are going to be right for the environment and for the air quality, while making sure that we are killing the germs and bacteria in the restrooms and in the gyms and the amenity areas. So we definitely keep that fine line and the right mix, but we've definitely gone green.
Right. How do you balance the cost? Because I imagine the more noxious, the less expensive it is.
You know what? You grow and get the volume so that you can minimize the cost. So fortunately, we've gotten enough accounts to make it kind of cost neutral to whether they were going green or not green. It's been the wave of what our clients want.
Right, right. And if they wanted that and it just cost more,
we would have to,
what would happen?
We would look to make sure that we provided it. And then if it was something that was going to deplete margin and be a tough part of the business, we will look for other ways to have ancillary services to add to the revenue mix to offset it.
Because that's a big piece of all of this, of doing any business well, is on the client or the customer side. That there's this constant tug of, well, if I make this better, if I make this more socially responsible or environmentally responsible, it's going to add cost.
Yes. And they get it, by the way, meaning they clients do dictate and demand certain things they want in the buildings too. And so they're raising their hands to make sure that the products are the right products for their buildings.
Are they willing to pay for it? If you say, well, it's going to cost X,
I think it depends on the vertical and depends on the client. So we have corporate and commercial clients, some of which, really were ahead of their time, even in terms of the wages and benefits that are being provided to maintenance staff or janitors or guards. We have others that absolutely have to be very, economically diligent. And not that the others aren't, but they have to be very thoughtful about each and every penny that's going into the building. So, we definitely look to have those conversations and to make sure that we are educating ourselves and the clients on what these products mean to the buildings and what the costs are. I think it's truly not a cost prohibitive step, though, and hasn't been, to go green.
Right.
Having a LEED silver or LEED gold building, that is cost for the owners and developers to have those systems in, but that is...
Oh, that's right. I had never thought of that. So if you're a LEED building, if you're a LEED gold building, you spend all this money to build it, there's still the continuous running of it.
Exactly.
Which is where your certification comes in. So you guys are able
one subset to make sure that from the point standpoint, from the maintaining that certification, I'm one subset of how they built the roof, energy systems, the lighting, the water disposal, all of that. I'm one, but I'm a key component, even just in terms of, offering recommendations for automating dispensers in the restrooms. That makes a difference so that they're not leaving water running in a sink versus having automated, sinks. So there's certain steps that we can add value there too.
Right, right. And you guys are coming in and making these recommendations.
Absolutely.
That's great. That is great. So let's just take just a tiny step back. Just to make sure that everybody who's listening knows perfectly well exactly what your business is. So your employees are the janitors, maintenance staff, security guards, and concierge people in office buildings and residential buildings.
Yep, and so residential being multifamily, which has been an incredible vertical. So the rental buildings that you see going up, the Avalons, the Gray Stars, the Bizzutos, Bell Partners, ZRS. It's the condominium buildings managed by multiple management companies. It is corporate headquarters. It's commercial. It's retail.
Right.
Stella McCartney. It's schools. It's anyone that's churches.
Right.
Alfred Street
Everyone.
Baptist. It's whoever needs professional maintenance, janitorial, security, or front desk. That's
just about everyone.
Everyone.
It's because who wants to clean the place that isn't their home, right? I mean, and that many people want to clean their home either.
Right. But then they want to make sure that people that are cleaning their homes, their offices, are at a certain level and standard. And I think today, while the job market is looking robust and, unemployment thankfully is down, finding strong teams that embody those, the characteristics of wanting to be excited to do the job and to be consistent in delivering it. It's not easy to just find teams to do this.
I'm sure.
So that's why they turned to us.
We are going to get there for sure. So basically you provide people who clean, maintain, and secure buildings of all kinds.
Yep.
What are concierge services?
So concierge for us is when you go into your home after a long day and you need your packages and your dry cleaning, or you have family members coming in that need to be announced, you know, any visitor coming in.
Right. So front door service.
Front door service. Yep. Mm-hmm. Leaving keys for a nanny or maybe a house cleaner.
Okay. Yep. So the person at the front door.
Yep.
And doorman, I assume?
Yep.
Is that part of it?
Sure. So they're either behind the desk handling contractors, packages, dry cleaning, visitors, or they're at the door and the desk getting a cart if you're unloading your car to opening the door. Absolutely.
Right.
That is a concierge. And so we're not handling your money.
Right.
There are incredible concierge services that could say, would you like two tickets to, you know, the next Billy Joel concert and you want to go to Babbo or, or Lupa or whatever? They'll handle that. We're not trying to do the monetary transactions.
Got it. And who hires you? The buildings hire you? The companies hire you? Who's hiring you?
Residential and commercial management companies could be hiring us. So C.B. Richard Ellis, Jones Lang LaSalle, Newmark, these other companies I mentioned. Ownership groups directly, if they directly manage their assets, could hire us. Condominium boards through a management company could hire us. So whoever's managing that asset and has to have the building cleaned and secured and run that, they're probably hiring the landscaper, the roofer, the pest control, the elevator group, all those vendor services, they're hiring us.
Right. So you're pretty far from the people that your employees are face to face with.
I am not. I see them I see them all the time.
Right. No. But in terms of, you know, you're selling into some group of people. It sounds like mostly management companies, right? So it seems to be there's this big buffer between you and really who your end stage client is, the person who you're actually serving. I realize you're also serving the maintenance companies, but you're really serving the building residents.
You're right. So if there's a 400 unit rental building and a 300,000 square foot corporate complex next door, I'm serving those 400 residents and the 500 or 1,000 employees in that building, because any one of them could find the entryway, the restroom needs to be restocked, the amenity areas need to be cleaned. So all of them have a voice, and the voices today are very, very clear about the quality.
Rob's waving his phone around.
I'm waving an iPhone so they can go on to many different ways to express their satisfaction or lack thereof and voice it about the community and the complex to their management company or to the world. And it's bigger today in terms of getting that message out than it's ever been before.
Right. Then it's the fact that you're face-to-face and need to really please hundreds of thousands of people per day, if not millions. I mean, have you ever actually taken the time to add up the number of people who are within all these facilities
you
guys?
I tell you what I have added. So we provide over 100,000 hours a week.
Wow.
You know, of just this service.
Mm-hmm.
So I always say, you know, with over 1,000 properties, and I have properties that have 1,000 units. I have properties. Mm-hmm. We probably impact millions and millions of lives through what we do, and as part of our overall mission at Plan, to really enhance the quality of life for the tenants and residents that we service as our why in Simon Sinek, like what's your why? Like that's why we exist.
Right.
It's a very motivating goal.
Right.
And so when you reached, and we talked about, you know, social purpose and caring, that really does resonate with this group. And so I think they know that the impact they have is real.
Right. How do you do things differently from your competitors?
There are competitors that really run the gamut. I mean, in my industry, you can imagine in market share how many buildings need to be cleaned or secured.
Of course.
I mean, I am just planned. Is just scratching the surface of what we could be. We're not even statistically relevant in any market that we service. Like if you look at our what the market could be, maybe New Jersey, we could have, if I told you I had 1 or 2% of the market, we would be, you know, it'd be ridiculous. So there are $1 billion bad boys, you know, and there are a ton of mom and pop startups that come up all the time that just put up their shingle or whatever and say, hey, I'm a company in this space. differentiators are huge. I could go into, I guess, one of our biggest, and I think for our unique kind of differentiator, is that everyone says, you guys all pick off the same labor pool. You know, you're providing the staffing, and everyone must come into your offices and just apply for positions, and you must take them. And I'm like, no. We could all have the same pool. We're very discerning here in how we screen and select individuals to come in. So we talked about values before. Mm-hmm. And so I took from another four-generation business, Nordstrom. Nordstrom hires for attitude and trains for skill. I can't make you, Doug, you seem like a very positive, good person. I can't make someone have positivity or a great attitude. You can't teach integrity, can't teach passion. But you can interview and screen for it. Mm-hmm. So like Nordstrom, we created a methodology. Ours is called iPlan. Integrity, passion, longevity, attitude, and never being complacent. And we are so methodical and disciplined in how we screen and select who goes into our buildings that I believe our continuity and consistency is different than the pack. Our retention is better than the competition. Mm-hmm. Our service delivery and execution is very well received.
Right.
And so just on the whole process of good in is good out,
right.
It starts with screening and right. selection. Mm-hmm. It has to start there.
Right.
And we have a methodology and a system that is just different, in my opinion, just better than what others are doing, and we keep perfecting it. We're on like version 8.0 of how we screen and select.
Right.
And when you do that, and you get the right individuals that are methodically selected in, how you onboard, you never get a second chance to make a first impression with both a client and an employee. Mm-hmm. We do a 30-day survey after they're hired to see if they love the experience, to make sure that they're very happy with planned and with the experience of how they were recruited, how they were trained.
Wow.
They meet with their ops team. Mm-hmm. They get a plan pal or someone to have them see where the water cooler is and what's the lexicon and language that you use here. Mm-hmm. And then it really runs the gamut. You know, after they're screened right, after they're onboarded right, there's a number of things we do here that I believe are just very different than what the world does. So we recognize, as I mentioned on the core values, it's called living our core. Living the core values, recognize monetary bonus, certificate. They're getting recognized by the company in a way that says you are a great reflection of what we do. And we do it to the tune of $40,000 or $50,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So if I'm giving out a multiple $50, $100 bonuses, it means a lot.
Right.
To the group.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually impacts service and retention. Mm-hmm. We have a very robust, social purpose and giving back. I think the group sees it and feels it and knows that, you know, at this company, you know, we want to be best in the world for what we do and best for the world in what we do. Mm-hmm. So that's great. But there are a number. There's a training, you know, we have an Oracle training center downstairs. It's our professional development center. And we bring professional development out to our employees to make sure that we're constantly motivating and educating the team on both interpersonal and technical skills. Mm-hmm. We promote from within. The COO of this company was a janitor. Many that operate and run here have grown through being janitors and maintenance and front desk to run divisions. So I think that is great and motivating.
Mm-hmm. You talked about retaining people. And if you're hiring people on all these great values and they're the way they interact with the world, that's something that they could sell anywhere, right? I mean, that's something that is valued across many organizations, many different places. Do you pay better than your competitors?
I'd say that in our world, we have more of our team that gets asked to go off to our client site. The clients take in a nice way and advance some of our team that's there. So I think at our group, we're not per se paying much. You know, we have to stay very competitive in our world.
It's a small margin business.
It's a tough business.
Everybody's looking at the bottom line in the end of what it takes to run these buildings.
They'll pay more through time if they love the team and want to recognize and reward the team, or they're going to promote some of our team and move them and ask and move them to maybe positions within their own organization.
Like the management company or the corporation or the...
Exactly.
Okay.
Like, can this person do leasing for us? Can this person maybe has an opportunity to work in-house to do maintenance or in-house to do, you know, as an administrator.
Right. And
now, those are great, but those opportunities present themselves, as well as the fact that we are investing in our employees to advance their, hopefully, their careers here. Mm-hmm. But yes, you said those values are transferable to multiple organizations.
Right.
And to get your feet grounded as a janitor or a guard here and to have an impact at Sotheby's or ADP or Valley National Bank or for Avalon or these groups or Morgan Properties, or it means a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they see it.
Right.
Which is
right.
great.
That is great. I mean, advancement is just a tremendous opportunity.
It is.
I mean, especially considering where your employees start from. They are low-wage workers.
Low-wage, entry-level.
You've got low-wage workers. We already talked about the tight margins. How is all this talk about a $15 minimum wage going to affect you?
It has. It's just having good conversations with our clients because, you know, in a market like New York, in 3 years, it went from 11 to 13 to 15.
Right.
Those are very important business discussions with clients that need to kind of get educated to what the market's changed
right.
by this legislation
right.
and what that means for the price per square foot or
right.
for the cost to clean their building. Now, they get it when you take the time to have thoughtful discussions about it versus sending an increase request for 25%. Mm-hmm. It's a very tough ask if it's not grounded in, so here's where we were, here's
right.
where we are, here's what we're doing,
right.
and to make sure that we are being thoughtful on how we've, what we're asking for.
Right.
Because we know that that in essence, they could either go out to bid, are we asking for an increase that we are comfortable with asking
right.
for?
So, but if it's legislated, everybody's got to, right? Doesn't everybody have to
I
move
would
up?
Feel that everybody has to play ball, but I have to say, I sometimes see competition provide service for numbers, just, you know, you hear about
wow.
it, that are low.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly don't want to compromise in that way. If we know that a building needs 2 full-time day people and 8 people at night,
right.
and now we've cut it down where that's where our bare end is. That's what you, and they're saying, hey, someone's bidding it with 5 people at night.
Oh.
And we know it's 8.
Right.
We can say, well, then you give it a go.
Right.
Don't lose our number
right.
or the website or the email.
Right.
And we're here.
Right.
And we do get a lot of business where some will give it a go.
Right.
We take pride in feeling that we are trying to passionately raise the bar. We just have to keep navigating through, hold our heads up, and do what's right. I remember in the beginning, I would have taken anything, work for work's sake. Like, oh, you know, we'll take that one, we'll do that one, and build it up for volume. But after a while, that doesn't really, if you want to stand the test of time, you have to have certain principles in terms
right.
of what you'll stand for if you're going to do the work.
Right, which goes back to my intro about being a truly sustainable company.
Yes.
That in the end, companies that don't do things right eventually die a very hard death, which is why I find it so incredible that so many business leaders have such a hard time getting over this hump of running their business in a humane and environmentally conscious way.
And I think that business leaders that look at their business as what's the money, what's the profit, and they go quarter to quarter on their statements and look at how much money they're making, if you're not in it for the long haul and trying to do it in a way that's sustainable
right.
and that can really stand that test of time, then eventually you will hit that roadblock and you will fail in some capacity
right.
if you're only driven by the money. I don't feel we're paying per se, our janitorial or maintenance, security or concierge, vastly more. We're not. We're treating our teams better.
Mm-hmm.
We are recognizing more.
Mm-hmm.
We are investing and empowering more. We treat our employees like we treat ourselves, like we treat our clients. So they're at least in an environment of respect and a communication and recognition. We
right.
promote from within. We want to have them career paths here while having to be competitive on
right.
on the price
mm-hmm.
and the wage.
Right. Father of a friend of mine in the 60s worked at Hoffman LaRoche as a janitor.
Sure.
He was a Hoffman LaRoche employee. He had 3 kids. He had a house. His wife stayed at home. They had a middle-class life. That doesn't happen anymore. The narrative that I believe after reading tons and tons and tons and tons, and is that, you know, at some point in the 70s, maybe it was Milton Friedman's fault, maybe it was somebody else's fault, decided shareholders are the only social responsibility that a company has. Their only social responsibility, he said, is to make money. So everybody started looking at shareholders. The Hoffman LaRoches of the world decided, you know what? We could outsource our janitorial services. We could take all this money off the books, save a ton of money, make money for the shareholders, right? Sure. Meanwhile, what we're now seeing, that it's been great for the top 10% and the bottom has been flat completely, in part because, you know, the top have sort of squeezed all this cash out of all these companies, in part by doing what Hoffman LaRoche did. And I bring that example up for an obvious reason, because you sit in this very interesting place where you can see this all happening.
I do believe and see and know that a wage and wealth gap exists. And I think there's a lot of social norms and issues that are prevalent in the country today. When Obamacare and healthcare came out, they were saying that's going to be such a problem for the industry because you're going to have to go back when employees elect to take health, and you're going to lose money or clients. And I said, you know what? No, I do believe that the world, everyone should have healthcare in mm-hmm. some. I think it's a it's part of being a human being, right, to be able to have the ability to have proper healthcare.
Right.
I
it's
do.
A human right.
I believe that. Mm-hmm. So I said, when our employees opt in to the health plans, and we go to clients and tell them that four of your eight team, guards, janitors, opted in, it costs blank. Because it does cost. There's not mm-hmm. a system right now that...
Right. So you guys pay some and they pay some.
Yes. I go, they're going to get it if we have good discussions mm-hmm. about... It's now mm-hmm. part of our society, mm-hmm. and they're going to get it intellectually. Right. And you know mm-hmm. what? Financially, just like the New York one, when minimum wage went up mm-hmm. to flip a burger or clean the right. thing to make ends meet, it's not easy. They're going to get it. Mm-hmm. So I was happy to see that. And we had about, I'll tell you right now, we have maybe 400 or 500 only of 3,700 that have opted in. Now, I have many part-timers as well.
Right.
So I think it's good. I think it can get better. But then you talk about, like, so you, let's talk unions for one right. for one moment. So I am 85% of our workforce is non-union, because I think unions were created because people in the CEO seat, owners, were mistreating workers.
Right.
Longer
yes.
hours, bad mm-hmm. Treatment, bad benefits, all right. of that. We don't subscribe right. to treating uh-huh. people poorly, so I feel that, you know, unless there was a true need to have a unionized mm-hmm. Situation,
right.
it's how you respect, communicate, recognize, and treat people that's going to matter much more than having someone dictate what to do. Now, I say that because these unions have pensions, and some of these pensions have actually gone into withdrawal liability that they can't right. even afford to mm-hmm. pay out the pensions. So I feel that actually was a big 180
right.
to what the promise was
right.
to versus maybe a 401k or an right. investment
right.
like
at
that.
At some point, it started out as the unions are watching the CEOs, and then the question comes up, well, who's watching the unions?
Right, and then the unions, ended up having where, you know, unfortunately, I feel, because no one was really watching, in during good and bad times, mm-hmm. and now good time, they can't even afford, like, they couldn't even run their funds the right way to honor their commitments, and you know who ended up having to hold the bag? Are the owner, the associations, the those that signed in as employers, mm-hmm. well, we're underfunded, you need to fund it.
Wow.
So, I'm proud that, you know, we at least have 85% of our mm-hmm. team is not dealing, mm-hmm. that I don't have to deal with, but it's an interesting bag, you know, right. when you look at yeah. things.
So between the healthcare and the minimum wage, it sounds, and this is important, trying to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like, from your perspective, as somebody who wants to operate as ethically and righteously as you possibly can and to treat people as best as you possibly can given market circumstances, right? But it sounds like, from what you're saying, from those two examples, that there is a place for legislating this so that it creates an even playing field
yeah, so
for you versus the people who just want to run their business in the opposite manner.
Yeah, I think that you use the key term, and I love that you said, is like when you even the playing field, when everyone needs to play the game a certain way, I'm a big proponent, and I have no issue.
Right.
If everyone is giving health, if everyone's doing the 401k, mm-hmm. then let's play ball, because right. our differentiators are gonna mm-hmm. shine. Mm-hmm. But when it's, I think my problem is when it's so convoluted, so right. obscure and ambiguous, and so this person can offer no benefits, mm-hmm. and this one's offering benefits, and they're like, well, these guys are at 18 an hour, these guys are at 22 an hour, let's go with 18. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I want to have the discussion with the person right. across the table and say, well, these are the things we're giving to the workforce that matter, mm-hmm. because it's hard enough.
Right.
And so we do want to give a week of paid vacation or 5 sick days, and there's a lot right. of good ordinances mm-hmm. that everyone's supposed to play by the same rules. Mm-hmm. 7 holidays.
Right.
So if someone's going to come in and I'm offering 17 PTO days and the next guy's offering 10, mm-hmm. those 7 days could right. be the difference between a won and lost right. opportunity. Mm-hmm. So yes, when you even the playing field and pull us up,
right.
I have no issue whatsoever.
Right, right. You had talked earlier, I think you had said that different buildings want different things, that
sure.
that sometimes, you know, that even the amount that you're paying your employees could vary from building to building.
Yes, some do.
So here's sort of what I was setting up earlier in talking about how far removed you are from the people you see every day. So with a consumer brand, right? I mean, Whole Foods does this with every single thing that's in their store, right? You know, they put some cultural value on this. This is healthier for you. This is better for the environment, all that. If you polled a bunch of people in a residential building, let's say, and asked them, do you think you're the people who clean the building, the person who's at the front desk, do you think they have a right to healthcare and they should have healthcare? They say yes. And then you say, well, that costs more. And they say, I'm okay with that. How do you, I guess.
I like the kind of where you're
right.
Where
I mean,
you're
this
going.
Isn't really think, a question, but
right.
it,
if we survey
it
a
just,
building.
It just puts you in a tough spot in that you want to operate your company at this level, right? I'm sure management companies are just looking at the bottom line.
They have obligations, like you mentioned, shareholders mm-hmm. to some condominium boards can change, and some boards can come in and want very much to pay higher wages and give better benefits.
Right.
And others, and remember, these can be investments and it's their
right.
home, need to cut costs mm-hmm. for certain reasons. So it's really what their objective is. But, you know, it's interesting. If you polled a group and talked about just basic human things like that, I'm sure the polls would come back very positive and delightful about treating and giving certain wages and benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it comes to the running of their investment,
right.
and they said, okay, your common area maintenance, whether you're a tenant or a resident, needs to go up X percent.
Mm-hmm.
Some will say, I didn't mean today.
Right.
Or mm-hmm. not that much.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a tug and war, mm-hmm. you know, tug of war and give and take. And we'll go for what we perceive as the home run on wages and benefits if we believe we can in the
right.
beginning,
mm-hmm.
because reduced turnover means
right.
more profitable, higher consistency, happier employees, happier clients. Turnover is what can hurt the business.
Right.
So I'm with the whole uh-huh. notion that the more you pay, the more you give, you know, you can
right.
you can certainly have a more stronger, tighter workforce.
Mm-hmm.
No problem there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just playing in the market where I have to make sure that we are, you know, honoring what the industry is.
Did you always know that you were gonna be the CEO of this company one day? I mean, as you were growing up, was that your manifest destiny?
I love this question. So I grew up, my grandfather was into the wrestling, the WWF, now WWE.
Mm-hmm, right.
And my father took me to my first WrestleMania in 1984. I always wanted to be the Intercontinental Champion, like, you know, fight in a ladder match, like
yeah,
others, and have a whole persona. So I would have loved to have been Intercontinental Champion like one time.
Right.
Like
just
literally.
Once. Just
yeah,
once.
Just one. Like I think it would have been good for
not asking
my
much.
Group, my people I'm friends with. Right. Like, oh my God, I can't believe you won the Intercontinental right. title. Like, and so I always
get to walk
this,
around with the big belt.
Yeah, like the belt. Like people talk about being the Hall of Fame one day. Maybe like, you know, it'd be very interesting. But no, so I went, I graduated from the University of Pennsylvania in 95. I went to work for a concert promoter, Delsner Slater Enterprises. That was cool.
Ron Delsner, right?
Yeah.
I remember the announcement.
Crazy.
Ron Delsner
Ron
presents.
Delsner and Ron Delsner, if we talk about culture, and Ron, if you're out, if you're listening to this, I love that I got to work with you and Harriet. It was my first job out of school, but boy, man, you ran one incredibly. I went to work at Anderson Consulting for 2 years and did a PeopleSoft installation in Chicago and traveled for almost a year. Back and forth from New York to Chicago.
Right.
So I wanted to kind of be out in the world and get a feel for who I was maybe and what I could do. Yes, in the back of my mind, not being CEO per se, but, you know, working with my grand, you know, spending time with my grandfather and my father and my mom was in the business for 20 plus years. It certainly was something that I thought about.
Right.
But I wouldn't say I was thinking about being the CEO per se or just trying to make my mark within the business.
On your website, on the About Us part, where you list all your, I guess, your top management.
Sure.
It says 20% of them are women, including big roles in operations.
Okay. I didn't even know that, by the way. I think it's good that I did not know that we identified in that way to want to just even put the breakdown like that.
You didn't put the breakdown. I just went through photos and I just
counted.
And what I found is that in the security industry, 22% are women. In the janitorial industry, 32% are women. But in this larger sort of building property maintenance category, it was only 8% women.
Okay.
So by my rough calculation, you're doing pretty well. Do you give gender equity thought?
Yeah, no, we do. I mean, we give thought, first of all, we give thought to, we want diversity. So when, you know, while we're not saying, hey, you need to hire X, Y, and Z, we certainly want to be thoughtful and to have that inclusion. We have probably the most diverse workforce you could find, which we're very proud of. Mm-hmm. So we are thoughtful. We wouldn't want, you know, our vice president of HR, Catherine Bruno, is promoted up through the ranks. Like, we want to make sure that a lot of different viewpoints and opinions are put, you know, at the forefront.
Yeah.
So for the 3,700, you'll find diversity of all, whether it's male, female,
right,
or background, race, religion. You've got, it runs the gamut. And we do look at it. We take like a pulse snapshot, and we did it toward the end of last year, just to make sure we weren't being blinded by anything, to make sure that we were diverse.
Right.
And we are.
Right, keeping track. Paying attention is one of the most important things.
That was really it. It is something, though, that I want to be very, very candid. We did look.
Right.
Because we wanted to make sure that we weren't skewing one way. The maintenance field is very male dominated.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tell you that. Actually, oddly, the security guard field is a very good mix of all races, backgrounds, male, female. If I could hire more female maintenance techs, probably would.
What I found both surprising and not surprising in all those categories, and I got these stats off of, there's a site that I just found called US Data, which was started by a consulting company, I think Ernst & Young. And basically, they pull from government data and make it legible and readable. It's amazing. But what I saw, you're looking at me like, what the hell, what's this going to be? The disparity in pay between men and women in all these fields was really sort of took my breath away. I mean, a difference of $10,000 a year in the janitorial services, you know, when you're looking at $28,000 versus $18,000, I mean, that's not a lot.
Yeah, I don't.
That's, I mean, that's
I
not
would say
a lot
that,
to begin
that,
with.
That we look at as well, and I would say that in our, when we're bidding a job per se, whether female, male, janitors, maintenance, we're paying equitably across the board because it's really that's the role, and then let's just put a good, great, you know, motivated person in the role that is eye plan worthy and ready to play ball.
What part of the culture do you think could sort of use the biggest kick in the ass, like just sort of
at At Planned or just in the
in
world?
In general, in the world, to have more companies and more people in business shift to the way you do business.
I think they should maybe, it'd be nice to see that everyone adopted a social, in their budgets. You should have a portion of your budget in what are you going to give back to society right. And how are you going to do it? Because if you do that, you'll see that it's going to pay off a lot more than saying, no, that will just, you know, that's like an additional cost to mm-hmm. what we're doing. Cost of doing business is actually having a charitable social purpose mm-hmm. and budget for it.
Right.
And then when you do that, you'll mm-hmm. feel and know that you're going to get more ROI
right.
on the people that are mm-hmm. that are now motivated, retention of your team, the morale of your group, the difference that you make. It's going to pay itself off in the long run.
Right. And I'm going to add, just because I can, because I'm the host of this show, that only works if it's aligned with the internal values of the company. That if that's yeah. just on top of...
No, you're
if,
right.
If a shitty company gives away money,
right.
do you think the employees really care?
No, you have to have the whole thing. You can't fake your the way through the business. You can't just make an announcement that we are a charitable, customer service-oriented right. company. And it's like, are we? You right. know, like, you got to live it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you live it.
Thank you.
Definitely live it. And I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Rob.
It's great.
I can't help but compare Rob Francis with Charles Rosen from Ironbound Hard Cider, who we spoke to in the last two episodes. There's so much to point to that's different about their businesses and their personalities. Ironbound is practically a brand new company, while Planned Companies has been around for over a century. Ironbound relies just as much, if not more, on the land as it does from people, while Planned's entire business is people. People cleaning, maintaining, and securing buildings. And don't forget about concierge services. Charles combines equal parts passion, gumption, knowledge, comedy, and sheer will to propel Ironbound, while Rob appears to approach things in a more traditional way and works within the more conservative environment of real estate. But they are similar in so many ways. They both train their employees so well that these employees are often poached by vendors, clients, and others. The interesting thing is that they both see this as a net positive, primarily because it provides a better future for that employee who they've trained. Second, they're both in incredibly competitive industries in which companies frequently seem to lead a race to the bottom. But both Rob and Charles refuse to participate in that race. Instead, they are each trying to lead a path to raising the bar. And third, they both in one way, shape, or form see their businesses as a society that exists for the betterment of everyone who's in it. They each speak differently about this, but each one feels very obligated to come up with business practices that truly benefit everyone. This is exactly what I was hoping for when I started creating The Righteous Capitalists. Two very different business owners, two very different businesses, which, using a sample size of two, proves that it doesn't matter what kind of business you have, how old it is, or what kind of personality you have, you can operate in a way that casts aside many of the shitty old assumptions we have about how we make money. The Righteous Capitalist has production support from Julie Burstein. The voice you hear that is neither me nor my guest is Deborah Goldstein. Our sound quality is brought to you by John Melillo, and our music was written by the one and only Ron Carney. Thank you for listening and for taking this journey with us.
This has been the Righteous Capitalist Podcast with Doug Zacher. To learn more, suggest a Righteous Capitalist for the show, or to subscribe, visit us at therighteouscapitalists.com or find us on all social media platforms with the handle Doug Zacher, The Righteous Capitalist Podcast, how we make money matters.